So our guest speaker tonight has had a long and accomplished career with 31 years with the Australian Federal Police, specialising in major investigations into drug trafficking, people smuggling, human trafficking, organised crime and significant fraud against the Australian government. In the current phase of his career as a private consultant, he's designed and delivered investigation training programs to police, customs officials, judges, intelligence analysts and taxation officers all across the world in countries such as Papua New Guinea, Indonesia, Singapore, Thailand, China, Nigeria, Mauritius, Botswana and the UAE, amongst many others, it looks like, from his profile. And from 2015 to 2018, he was engaged as a consultant to the United Nations Office of Drugs and Crime. He also has a keen interest in military history, and tonight he'll be speaking for us on the topic of human trafficking. So please join me in warmly welcoming Chris Douglas on the topic of human trafficking.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam President, for that warm introduction. And good evening to you all. I'm not an expert in human trafficking. My background is actually financial crime, investigation of money laundering, terrorism financing, and bribery and corruption. But in the investigation of those offences and the advice I give to clients both here in Australia and overseas, I frequently come across a number of other predicate offences that we need to look at. And human trafficking is one of those. So tonight, this is part of a series of presentations I've been delivering to Rotary Clubs and other small groups on human trafficking to raise awareness on this crime type, because it is growing globally. And with the occurrence of COVID-19, we can expect that there'll be now greater opportunities for criminals to take advantage of the pandemic to push their trade craft. So there is a lot of data here, and I might, given the time constraints, flick through some slides quickly, but don't be alarmed. You won't lose anything because I'll make my presentation available to the Institute, who can send it out to you if you want. It'll be in PDF format, so compress it. So all the data, if you don't follow it quickly, because I'm running too fast, no problem, you'll have it. I don't own the data. I'll quote my sources as I go. All right, so the session content, this is all I'm going to quickly focus on. What is human trafficking? I'll give you some figures on size and profits, the types of the victims and the types of exploitation, the drivers and the risk factors, those who are involved in this horrible crime, the common business sectors involved, and the countries that are sources and of victims and major recipients. And then we'll just briefly end with some international and national initiatives. Now, each one of these areas is a major presentation in its own right. So I can only just touch upon it. So it's awareness to get you interested. I've taken out some of the methods that criminals used to recruit victims, only because time restraints, but I will touch briefly on grooming. I put grooming in when the audience is a lot younger. No offence to anyone here, but if I'm engaged to talk to, say, 20 to 25-year-olds, simply because it's directly relevant to them, okay? Because that's part of the market for what criminals look for. All right, so what is human trafficking? This is not a legal definition, but I just want to cover it to make certain everyone's aware of what it is and what it's not. It's the process of trapping people for the use of violence, deception and coercion, and who are then exploited for purposes of forced labour, prostitution, domestic servitude and other forms of exploitation. Now, in this definition, we remove some of the myths. Human trafficking is not just about sexual exploitation. The great bulk of human trafficking is also labour exploitation, particularly in industries where there's very little skill required, such as in farming, agriculture, mining, fishing, tourism. They are the biggest consumers of trafficked labour around the world. And you may yourselves have been in contact with a trafficked victim and not even known about it, or coming in contact with a trafficking organisation and not even be aware of it because of their covert clandestine activities. So basically, when you boil it down, we're talking about the trade in human beings as commodities, ladies and gentlemen, where a price is put on a life of a human being, depending upon their what someone wants to use them for and the capability or characteristics of that human being. They grade human beings just as we would cattle. Okay, so that's what we're talking about. It's an appalling crime, as you'll agree, and it's a growing crime around the world. All right, so just a few statistics on it. And these are from the UNODC and other agencies, which I've quoted here. There's about 40.3 million people who are victims of human trafficking around the world. These are estimates. We simply don't know because organised crime doesn't publish annual reports, do they? Some criminals have established businesses which they move people, but most of them are through private companies. 24.9 have been estimated to be exploited for labour, including 16 million in private sector supply chains. Hence the importance you see now in Australia of companies which have a turnover of $100 million or more are required to submit statements on their human trafficking risks. We were a bit late. The US was an early driver, particularly in the state of California and the UK, in clamping down on the use of human beings or misuse of human beings in supply chains. According to UNODC, about 15 million people are caught up in forced marriage. Now, these are only estimates. We really don't know. It could be less than that. It could be more. But what you're talking about when it's a forced marriage, you're talking about rape. People being compelled to marry someone they don't want to marry and engage in activity they don't want to do. It's rape. And if they're under 18 years of age, it's definitely rape. Two-thirds of profits generated for human trafficking are commercial sexual exploitation. And this is talking globally. It does vary from country to country, region to region, but globally. And predominantly, it's women and girls. Though there's a growing trend with boys being in demand as well. We don't know if it's a growing trend or we're getting better at detecting it, but certainly the figures are telling us boys are in demand. I'm going to use talk in a way that some of you might be appalled by. It's not, I apologise for it. We talked about victims, but the reality is there are people out there who want children for sex. And they're prepared to pay a lot of money for it. A lot of money. Okay. Human trafficking is regarded as the third most profitable crime globally behind drug trafficking and weapon smuggling. But again, that depends on the environment you're in, the region, the country. Human trafficking, I know in parts where I'm in Nigeria, is the number one revenue earner, particularly going into places like Kaduna, north of Abuja, the capital, along with weapon smuggling. Drugs are minor. You get more money from trafficking in a human being than you do from anything else. Estimated profit is about $31.6 billion, though I have seen figures estimate up to $150 billion. It depends how it's calculated. Is that figure for the price that's paid for a victim? Or is $150 billion the price, the revenue that an organisation earns from using trafficked labour? There's two ways to look at it, isn't there? Putting my proceeds of crime hat on, and it's one of my fields is to recover assets or money derived from crime, I'd go the top end scale. The profits earned from it, not the expense of what you paid to get the victim. All right? And sadly, they, as I said before, they see them as commodities. And with the right person, they can pull in over 100 times the amount of revenue that can cost them to actually get the victim. But that varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, because some countries it's not as popular as you might think. All right. Again, more statistics. Sadly, of every 10 victims, I'll go back a bit. These figures I'm giving you are from court cases, not from any actual research on the ground. So what the court cases from around the world, from 170 countries, tell us are these figures from the UNODC. So for every 10 victims, 5 are adult women and 2 are girls. So you can see how the high proportion of women who are victims in this crime from the court cases. 1/3 of the victims are children, girls and boys, predominantly girls. But again, that varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. In some cases, boys are edging up even closer. Most child victims that are trafficked internationally are for sexual services. It's rare that children are trafficked for labour because they can get child labourers in the country they are. Most of it is for sex. Adult men make up 20% of the figures, and that's primarily for labour, for working in agricultural sectors, in the mining sectors, fishing and so forth. They're recruited because of their body, their bulk. And that trend is increasing, or are we getting better at detecting it? It's hard to say. There is an increase in the use of the demand for men for sex. And in some parts of Africa, there's a demand for young boys by European women for sex. They go there purely to meet young African males. Now, they'll argue that in that case, they're over 18 years of age and they're willing participants. The reality is they're poor. They're very, very poor. So they do have a power imbalance there over that particular person. Not judging, just making an observation. All right, so what's the degree and form of exploitation? Over 50% is sexual exploitation. Again, that varies across the regions. 38% forced labour. So keep in mind the myth, it's people think it's all about sexual exploitation, human trafficking. It's not. So it's about forced labour. 6% is criminality, where you get people, they recruit people to actually engage in crime. And if you've ever been to some countries like Hong Kong, you'll see it. You walk outside your hotel, you see a lot of Indian, Pakistani men who are there selling counterfeit products. They might have arrived in Hong Kong legally, but because their visa has expired, they're now fallen into the hands of human traffickers, perhaps, and those human traffickers are polycriminals. They also push counterfeit products, okay? Other forms of crime are burglaries, and for children, it's begging, pickpocketing and stealing, shoplifting. All right, forced marriages make up 1%, and we're seeing a growing increase now, at least in reporting, of baby selling, where women are who are pregnant, and once they work out they don't have any spouse, they're kidnapped or coerced into providing their baby to somebody against their will. And removal of organs is a trend that's occurring, we're seeing in Eastern Europe, particularly kidneys. All right, so we do know, and I won't go for these figures, we do know that migrants feature predominantly in this crime. They might have started off as a legitimate migrant, immigrating to a country to seek a better way of life. They've got a visa, but their visa's expired, or they didn't get the job they were expecting to get legitimately, and because of whatever reason. And when they go to renew their visa at the local consulate, or they use a migration agent to renew their visa, their circumstances are sold. They're dealing with a criminal group automatically, including at the consulate or the embassy, because many of the people who work there are locally engaged staff. They're not the citizens from our country. I'm not referring to Australia here. I'm referring generally to countries. Obviously, security systems vary from country to country. The information is sold, and a human trafficker will contact them to help them with their visa problem and help them with that job of a lifetime, maybe in another country. So they end up getting trafficked against their will, either into sexual services or labour. Or it could be they're in their own country and they're recruited by various means with a job of a lifetime to go overseas and they fall into the hands of traffickers upon arrival. But we do know migration has a major role in this. We also know globally from the figures that the people who are pulling the victims are the same nationality as the victims. Very strong correlation between it. So it'd be interesting to see once COVID-19 is over with, what the trend will be here in Australia. Because even though the government push has been from people smuggling, people from the same country are still pulling migrants from people smuggling. If they don't get jobs, you'll find that they'll fall into the hands of human traffickers. But thankfully, we've got a better safety net than most other countries. All right. So children, I've already mentioned some of these. What they get involved in. The one I didn't mention was fake orphanages and child soldier. If you ever go overseas and the tour bus stops at an orphanage to give money, unless you know it's a reputable orphanage and you've done your due diligence on that orphanage, do not give money. Do not get off the bus. because what will happen is those children are not orphans, in some cases, not all. Their children have been bought from the local village, the parents have sold them, and they're put into the orphanage and locked away until the tour bus comes out. And they see the tour bus coming, out come the children, people give money, they look poor, and then when the bus goes, the children are put back in the pens. Okay? That's how it works. So do your due diligence on it. And of course, child soldier, particularly in Africa. The Europol estimates for a single trafficked child to Europe that can earn €160,000 for that child for sexual services. Okay? Some men will pay, figures vary from my contacts in various police forces in Europe, around about €10,000 to have sex for child. More if the child's a virgin. Yes, it's disgusting. But that's the world we live in. That won't work, Chris, that will. All right, so why are teenagers vulnerable? Are there any doctors in here? Hope not, I'm not a doctor. But the reality is, why are young people vulnerable to anything? Well, because parts of their brain haven't developed very well. Their young person's brain is highly sensitive to pleasure and reward due to the nucleus accumbens not being fully developed. That means if we target young people, I'm going to tell them, it won't be me. I was talking about Molly earlier. Sorry, Molly, I'll drop you right in it. If we're going to target, say, students at this university, if we're going to go after women, I'm going to use a woman. Even if we're going after men, I'm going to use a woman. Some circumstance, I might use a man, depending on it. And I'll tell them how beautiful they are, how lovely they are, how intelligent they are, because they want to hear it. Young people love to hear it. The other part of their brain, the prefrontal cortex, is not developed either. That means their ability to calculate, identify and calculate risk is not as highly developed as you and I. All right? So they think themselves are bulletproof. I didn't know this when I was in the army. I was in the infantry. And we'd do anything for our country. Charge up whatever hill they want us to charge up. I was 17 years of age. Pay me the right money, I'll kill anyone you want. Okay? Now I know why. I was too young to understand what the consequences are. We used to actually joke about it. If we sent 50-year-old people off to war, they'd never go because it's like, hang on a minute, well, let's calculate the risk here. I don't want to get away from the serious topic, but that's the fact. All right, so again, that's for those who are technically minded, that's the chart. You'll have it when I send you the notes. But this is the reality, and if you've got young grandchildren or young children, you'll know this yourself, how you've got to guide them and mentor them and coach them. Well, traffickers know that as well, and they know how to manipulate them and which buttons to push. Okay, let's talk about sexual exploitation, given that 50% of people are caught up in sexual trafficking. And we're talking here about prostitution, window prostitution, like you see in parts of Europe, private flats, brothels, strip clubs, bars, pornography production companies, escort services, massage parlours, modelling agencies, hotels, private clubs and so forth. And I forgot to put their online services, particularly now of COVID. There's been a huge increase in the capacity of sex services delivered online, where obviously or male or females can perform certain acts all from the internet. Many of those people are trafficked. And the reason for that is because there are people out there who want different types of human beings every night to gratify themselves, of different colours, different ages, different sexes. All right, so in the sex industry, target groups are young girls from poor families, and sadly some parents sell their children, knowing they're going to be trafficked for sex or for labour. Although send them off to get work, and the group they give them to will give to the parents a loan. They give them their children, they give them a loan to buy agricultural machinery or agricultural tools. And when the parents can't pay the loan, well, they increase the rate, don't they, the percentage. So the parents are always in debt to the traffickers that they gave their children to because they're also ignorant. So you got that trap. The parents are now trapped and the children are trapped. They look for school, college and university students looking for employment, employed school leavers looking for better opportunities, and obviously virgins command a very high price. They can find out if someone's a virgin, big money to be made from that person. All right, I've covered that. Okay, let's talk about some of the profits. Globally, they estimate the global average profit is $21,800 per year. That's basically in the US, I understand, the average figure for that. Across other countries, it's much, much lower. It depends upon, obviously, the country. But to be quite frank, I go a lot of walking when I'm in Lagos. I don't go walking in Lagos mainland because it's just too dangerous, far too dangerous. But on Lagos Island, I go walking at night. I chance it. And I go there to observe crime and how it works, because that's what I'm really interested in, also military history. But I want to see how crime works on the street. And there's telltale signs you can see of organised crime, if you know what to look for. And I think the lowest I was offered for sex from a young girl was 3,000 naira, which is about $6. $6 for the night. That's how sad, the poverty. So I stopped back and watched. I doubled back around and there'd be cars picking her up and men were taking her away and other children would be there picked up, taken away, you know. Other would be adult women picked up, adult males. At Abuja, the capital. Here is the capital of Nigeria and you only got to go a few hundred metres from the Parliament House and the big national mosque and all that and you'll see women and men touting themselves and boys and girls in behind the concealed areas. All right. Some figures, this is from Europol, it's a few years old, I apologise for that, but they give you an idea of the amounts involved. Average sex workers' fees, 180 to 250 euro for a trafficked person. Eastern Europe falls down to 23 euro, simply because in there you've got a population that's not as wealthy perhaps as the Western Europe is. Southern European sex worker selling price, if you want a girl to sell them, it's 36 to 71,000 euro. But that again depends on the girl and the boy. Here we're talking about an adult, older adult at the lower scale and a child at the higher end scale. You get a lot of Nigerian girls trafficked into Europe, particularly into Italy. And they come from mainly one state, Edo State. And when I was there teaching about seizing of assets from drug trafficking and that, we talked about with the National Drug Law Enforcement Agency why people, young people, get caught up to be couriers. And they told me why. And it's the same with human traffickers. A female recruiter will spot a young female or a male, get to know the family, but then take the intended victim to what's called a juju man, who's on the take. Juju means like a religious person, right? A spiritual person in the village, in the town. And the juju man will say to the young person, male or female, usually female, you must do what this woman tells you to do. Otherwise, bad things will happen to your family. They'll get sick, you know, or whatever. So they believe it. So when they go away, the juju man gets paid for giving him his advice to the young girl or the young boy. And the person gets trafficked because the first person, the trafficker, will say to him, now you must come with me to Italy, right? Or bad things are going to happen to your family. Now, I didn't believe it. I thought, you know, these guys are having a lend to me. So I did my research and read it, and then I got further involved from drug asset seizures of drug trafficking into human trafficking. It just rolled on from there as you learnt more and more and you talk to local authorities. Average price for a child bride is about 248,000 euro. Now, why the price? Because you're probably getting a virgin and you've got that girl, if in the right country, for life. Until you're sick of her, then you get another one. Sorry if that offends anyone, but that's their attitude. All right, so you can see here some figures. The pink is human is for sexual servitude. The blue is for labour. Exploitation. Now you notice here they've lumped East Africa and the Pacific, which includes Australia, into that figure. It's very, very low in Australia, and I'll, if I get time later, I'll talk about why that is the case. It's not from poor reporting. Reporting here is actually pretty good. It's got a lot to do with our social conditions here and our migration policies and things like that. I'll send this to you, ma'am. It's not mine, it's from the UNODC. But okay, no questions. Okay. All right, so again, these are estimates from actual traffic victims. They're from actual traffic victims that have been rescued and charges laid. All right, so let's talk about the risk factors and the drivers. This is from, again, pre-existing factors that traffickers have taken advantage of, again, from victims who have been rescued. Of the victims, and this is a global figure, 51% fell victims to economic need, poverty. So there's a lot to be said for our social, our welfare system here, our safety net. It does stop people from falling into the trap. Now, I'm not going to express any political views or anything like that, but there is a significant advantage in raising social benefits. I know people don't want to pay higher taxes or things like that, but the reality is if we don't have that sort of framework and support, children can fall victim. That's the reality. Not just to this, but to any other crime as well. I know when they pushed, the Labor government actually pushed a number of single mothers from the single mother's pension or whatever it was called onto unemployment benefits when they got to a certain age of the child, right? So their benefit went down. A number of them fell victim to criminal groups, especially in money laundering. Criminals would hang out at Centrelink offices and just see who was getting angry because their benefit had been cut. And they recruited them to traffic in money, right? So if you had your benefit cut by $100 a week and I came to you and said, would you like to earn $300 a week? What are you going to say? What have I got to do? Well, all I need to do is go and bank some money for me. Oh, for $300 a week? Yes, a lot of money. Well, I need you to go to the casino. That's what happens. So you might save a few pennies here, but you pay for it there. All right, child of a dysfunctional family. Intimate partner traffics the person. So yeah, you've got here husbands trafficking their wives. Boyfriends trafficking their girlfriends. Friends trafficking their friends. Selling them out. Some, they're not actually friends. They've actually groomed them, become friends. But there are people so desperate in many parts of the world, they'll do that. They'll sell you. Mental behaviour and logical disorders. Immigration status, I mentioned before. Child deprived of parental care, and you'll see that in many countries. I've seen it in Pakistan and Nigeria. No offence for anyone who comes from there. But there's just thousands and thousands of children on the street. If you haven't been to these, I wouldn't recommend you go to Pakistan, nor Nigeria for that fact. But there's plenty of videos where you can see it. I mean, talking thousands. You just try and drive to a part of the city and they just swarm you. All homeless. All of them working for crime groups. As you go through the city, they all have mobile phones given to them by crime groups. They text your car you're in and who you are and what you're wearing. They start from the airport where you walk out, all the way to your hotel, to the security at the hotel, to the lady at the reception, the guy at the reception hotel, so know exactly what room you are in and can get you at any time they want to get you. In many countries of the world. Don't even think you're safe in some places like Singapore. It happens there too. Oh, yeah. It's concealed. So Singapore, no offence to Singaporeans here, they'll tell you it's the safest place in the world, no crime here. Yeah. An organised crime, I know what to look for. Okay. Street crime, yeah, that's low. Organised crime is quite high. All right, people with limited education, knowledge and physical disability. Again, some of the countries I've seen, just people with horrendous, horrible disfigurements. You know, missing limbs, missing eyes, blind, born deformed, and they're out begging. You stay late at night, and I do, I stay a bit late at night, especially on Friday nights, Saturday nights, and just see people pick them up, throw them in the back of a truck or back of a car, drive them off at 3 a.m., 4 a.m. in the morning, and then put them back on the streets when it's busy. All right, so if you go to these places, never give money to anyone who's destitute. Never. Because they're not going to get it. All right, so other problems. I won't go through all these. This will be I'll send this to you. The big one will be high demand for cheap labour is one. And corruption. Especially corruption. Again, my experience in Nigeria. Number of times, just to getting off the plane is a hassle. To clear immigration and customs and even the agency I'm working for, like the agency I'm going to teach, the guy's demanding a bribe. They don't ask for it. They just stand there, they put your bags up there, and they'll go, which means meal money. I go, no, I'm not giving you anything. And your bag sits there. And it sits there. And it sits there. I got so frustrated, I just emptied my whole bag out. And I said, "Mike, there it is, search it." And they walk away. Then you've got to put all your stuff back in, so it's pretty petulant. All right. All right, other factors are demand for cheap labour or free, demand for sexual services. How do you fight that? I don't know. Let me be blunt. There's a lot of men out there who want sex. They can't get it at home, or if they can, they want to get it from anywhere they can get it. The current issues in the Parliament House are probably the tip of the iceberg. Yep. And I met many men who love to go on international events overseas just so they can get away from the wife and play up. Golf's a popular one. You've got a husband here who wants to go overseas and play golf? Oh! All right. International events like World Cups, Olympics and UN deployments. World Cup. Traffickers love them. Why? Lots of players there, lots of people coming in there, and they want sex. Or they want cheap labour. So first of all, the government that hosts it is probably corrupt. They're giving all their contracts to their mates. And FIFA takes a big cut anyway. Look at the story in South Africa. They didn't make any money out of that, left them all to death. Well, criminal groups bring in that cheap labour, they bribe government officials so local people don't get employed. I talk about creating employment, it's a lot of crap. Excuse the French, in some respects. Putin in Russia, Winter Olympics, overpriced. He made a fortune out of that, him and his cronies. It's a how do you keep a government in power and keep it and rich with money? Run an international event. All right. There's a lot of merit in having one city that hosts the Olympic Games. A lot of merit for it. All right, natural disasters. You're probably aware of that. Never there's a natural disaster. You'll see criminals will go in and try and find out who is homeless, which children of parents have been killed. Well, if they haven't been killed, grab them anyway. Right? They'll care to keep looking for them, but they're gone. Thankfully now there are aid agencies in the world. Many of them are driven by the US who get on the ground quickly and look to protect the children. Right? So if you've got any spare time on your hands, that's something to join. Large building programs, very much like World Cups and Olympics, foster human, especially labour, cheap labour. I was speaking to a young girl in Kenya, and she told me she applied for a job with the Kenyan Tourism Authority. I forget the actual name of the authority, but she applied for the job, her and her friend. And they went there, and there were several hundred young girls in the audience. In comes a senior member from the Kenyan government, and he says, "You are all here for the job of keeping company the Chinese workers who are working on the railway line between Nairobi and Mombasa. Those of you who do not want to keep the Chinese workers company and happy, leave now." She left. Her friend stayed. I said, "What did your friend end up doing?" She said, "Chris, she had sex with Chinese workers in a ditch during their lunch hour to keep them all happy. All the girls who stayed were forced sexual labour." I've gone, "You're joking." She goes, "Nope." She told me that she found it hard to get away. So that's how it works. Obviously, he'd been corrupted. Well, that's only one story I've got from one person, because it's hard to get people to talk about it. You've really got to work hard to get people to come and talk to you, especially, you know, when you're trying to get a young lady to come and talk to you and you're an old white guy, you know, that creates connotations in itself, right? But I did. All right, so I'm looking at time. I'm running too far behind time, but to speed it up, these are some of the groups, the actors involved. You've got individual traffickers who are really opportunistic. They're the ones that sell their girlfriend or their wife. All right. Traffickers working in partnership, either full-time or part-time, where they'll assist each other, identify victims and traffic them, usually locally. These are usually local players. The more business-orientated ones with international connections, they might dominate a particular area of a city or an entire city, depending on how big the city is. Lagos is a city of 24 million people. A lot of crime groups in there. The biggest ones is the Nigerian police force. Most corrupt police force in the world. About time I tell you about the motor vehicle accident. I saw there, and there's a woman there dead in the car. What happened? Blow your mind away. All right, the other one's the organised crime group, where it's got a hierarchical structure, where you're talking about people at the top managing other people and so forth. All right, don't be blinded by this. So here's our victims down here. Here's our spotters and recruiters, people who look for victims, people who groom victims. I'll get time to talk a bit about grooming. Once the victim has been groomed, that means say they want to go for a better life somewhere, either in the same city or same state or to another country, they get picked up by a harbouring team that looks after them. This is like mustering cattle, mustering sheep. There's a team there, they call it the thug team, that keep them all in line. If it's still in the country and their destination's overseas, it's generally fairly nice. They don't want them running away, right? Everything's pleasant. But if it's offshore, they get transported offshore, the victims, and there they're put in offshore handlers. A team controls them. They might be assessed and graded. If it's sexual services, they'll be graded according to age, whether they're virgins, and whether, depending on what their client base is. Many of them have a client base of what their clients want, just like you're selecting sheep and cattle. The victims will then be sold by the sex industry or to local businesses. And the predominant ones are agriculture, construction, tourism, catering and cleaning. I'm missing there is fishing. All right? So most of them will be males. Either they'll be males and females. Most of the sex industry will be females, women and girls, with also young boys, with a small number of men. Okay? Now, the payments they make here, go back a bit, these spotters will work for a local manager who will bribe local authorities, and the local manager will work for an offshore crime group or be a broker at an offshore crime group. The victims are smuggled offshore, which goes to these businesses. These businesses will then make payments to various money laundering teams. That's an entirely separate lecture in itself. Very complex. Some crime groups will launder their own money. Others will outsource it. Here in Australia, we talk about drug trafficking. A lot of it is outsourced, where you see Vietnamese laundering money for Mexicans. Years ago, you wouldn't have seen that. Now you do. Money's king. All right. Pretty straightforward. You've got an offshore manager controls these with the thug team and other teams, and they'll bribe offshore authorities. Note the key here is bribes. And this is why it's very low in Australia, because we've tackled our corruption problem. I joined the Federal Police in 1983, and corruption was a problem in every police force. Every police force. Not so bad in the AFP, but it was there in Sydney. And now, it's rare. You get the odd officer who does the wrong thing, but in terms of endemic corruption, I doubt very much if it exists anywhere in the police forces. Mainly because of leadership. Better training, leadership, better recruitment. Better pay. Okay, better pay. But we were paid well in Sydney, but still people was corrupt. It was leadership. Not enough people standing up and saying, I'm not doing that. I think I'm one of the few surviving from my recruit course. All right, pushing on, because that's not the presentation. Okay, business models vary in groups. You've got some groups specialised in recruitment. Some groups specialise in exploitation. I put an example in there. Hungarian authorities dismantled a crime group who recruited young women in Hungary, but they sold them to a different crime group in Sydney because this is business. Just like I said before, you're moving cattle. You also now get brokers. The industry's so big, you get groups that act, individuals and partnerships and small groups who act as brokers between crime groups in the supply of people. And to them, it's just business. You often hear them say, it's not personal, it's just business. Of course it's personal, you're a human being. You're ruining their life. You're putting them into misery, which they'll never recover. All right, females, offenders, increasingly identified. This is some statistics of people who have been arrested. And the reason for that is they are usually used as the tip of the spear, the recruiter, the handler, to keep the victims comfortable. Older women have a great role in this. supporting mum, a lovable aunt. Right? It's all right, dear. You're going to a new job. Look beautiful. Right? And for the children, it's all business. That's how they think. And people believe it, especially the young people. All right. So women can be more convincing, especially in the recruitment and the early exploitation phase. But once they start to be exploited, men take over, with some women controlling the women in the offshore, but the locations, but it's usually men that do the enforcing. All right. Some of their processes. Some of you might go hunting and fishing. Well, this is a new definition. Hunting is where they will scour for victims. I'll talk quickly about where they do that. They'll look for people who have got all the characteristics I mentioned before. Mental illness, broken family, having problems studying at school or university, no opportunity to advancement, all that. They look for it. The other one is fishing, which is all online. They'll put out advertisements. For marriage agencies, employment agencies, tourism sites, education courses, home assistance, you name it, anything. So people will tap on it and go, oh, that sounds really interesting. Then they start the process. It's almost very similar to online scams, which I also teach. Right? The grooming techniques are very similar, except for older, to target older people, they work on, use a bit of different techniques, a little bit different approach. All right. So once they click on this, looking for that better job or whatever it is, they won a prize. How often do you get them? Behind them is not just a scam, could be a human trafficking. So this is some of the target identification. In Australia, it's usually the same ethnic group that does this. Overseas, it's much broader, where you'll see for advertising, religious groups. I've lost count on the number of Christian groups there are in Lagos. You want to make money in Lagos? Set up a church. Yep. Fleece as many people as you can. I'm sure there's good ones there, but I've seen some really bad ones. Well, criminals, what they do is infiltrate them, and they look for people who are down. They look for people who need salvation, whatever that is. Sporting clubs, social clubs, schools, universities, family and friends, they infiltrate them. The best way to get into a university is through volunteering. Okay? So if you've got any volunteer positions in a university, and I'm the crime group, guess what? I'm going to have some people to go and volunteer, aren't I? Especially if they're volunteering into counselling services. That's even better, isn't it? It's a business model. It's not personal. It's a business model. So I'm thinking like a criminal. That's how I'm getting in, and that's how they do get in. Same with the religious groups. Bribe the pastor. Who's got problems in the community? I'll top up your takings, and they'll take it. Not all of them, some. All right. Sporting clubs are the same, and social clubs. They mingle. So if I'm going to get into young people, I'm going to have my young lieutenants, male and female, all attractive, aren't they? To filter in and get victims, identify victims. And they're not hard to get in many other parts of the world. Here it's a lot harder because of our social support, our income support. Overseas, where there is no welfare support for many countries, come in spinner. All right. Just a bit of personal issues. If you ever do travel overseas, before you leave your home, tell the taxi driver nothing. Some people get into a taxi and blab how where they're going, how long they're going to be away for, and blah, blah, can't shut them up. Worse if you're going for, say, a Uber or something like that. Get in a taxi, have your alibi, that is, you know, where you're going, overseas. They know because they're taking you to the international airport. How long are you going for? You know, taxi drivers like to chat. Only a day. Well, it's a quick trip, or 2 days. Yeah, got to go to do whatever, right? Make it all up. So when I get in a taxi, thankfully I use a guy. It's always the same driver. I got a guy I use. But I still, again, left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. I trust him to drive the car. Even though I've known him 10 years, I don't trust him any further. And I'll tell him, yeah, wife's at home. My son's a policeman. He's moving into, you know, be with her, keep her company, that sort of thing. He's a policeman, but he's not definitely moving back to see mum, I'll tell you. But he doesn't need to know that. All right, so all that stuff. When you get overseas, zip up. Nothing, because a taxi driver in many countries is going to probably sell you out. Because it's money. If they're not selling you out to criminals, they're going to sell you out to a tour company. Because they've asked you, where are you going, what do you want to see, blah, 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 right? And they'll sell that information. Okay, so just be careful. Common businesses, I'll keep an eye on the time because I get the big... This is some of the... you'll get this, so just quickly scan there, you'll see all the businesses that are caught up in human trafficking for labour services. And you probably wouldn't even know some of them. Like in some countries, just to clean the toilets at a petrol station, the cleaners there have been trafficked, especially in Europe. They do a deal with all the major petrol companies to clean all their petrol stations, and there's no due diligence done, and the cleaners that come in have been trafficked, and they win the contracts because they're cheap. They're not paying much to the cleaners, but no one's asking any questions because no one's aware of it. All right. Something I was going to mention, I had a blank. Oh, nail salons and beauty parlours. Many of them too front as brothels. Fiji, I go to get my hair cut. Things are going pretty good, getting a haircut. The lady who's the owner is cutting my hair, then leans down and whispers in my ear, "Sir, would you like a massage?" I haven't got time for a massage. It doesn't say you're advertising massages. Yes, yes, but the lady over there can take you upstairs and give you a massage. And anything else you want. Just trafficking her. She's selling her. In China, it used to be, I think they've stopped it now, the old barber signs you used to see. In barber shops, you used to have the coloured signs. Well, if you went there as a male, you didn't get a haircut. You got a service, but it wasn't an haircut. All right. Nail salons and beauty salons. Hong Kong. If you travel around Hong Kong and you look at all the cafes, you'll see lots of girls, young girls, all of them about 20 years of age, especially in Kowloon and Mong Kok area, in the cafes and cafes, sitting there, or in the parks, sitting on the park. They're all usually prostitutes. Prostitution's illegal. If you go to a brothel there, and I did a course in Hong Kong, I was fortunate enough to go, did several brothel raids with the Hong Kong police, they're all empty. But you go there and you ask for a girl, the mafu, which is a male, which is a pimp, will make a phone call, and a girl will come up there. So if you raid the place, there's no girls there, so because prostitution's illegal. So all the girls in the cafe will come up one at a time, and the customer will say, yeah or no. No, I don't like that one. No, I don't like that one. And they'll just keep coming up until you pick one. Just like you're buying any item you want, except it's delivered. All right. So this is interesting in terms of how a crime group moves its money. Here's the victims. And there's many of these. I just pick one. They've been trafficked. The money they earn is picked up by the trafficking organisation. They send it overseas by various means to buy cars, trucks, trailers, machinery, yachts, apparel, whatever it is, because they own businesses in the country where it's been trafficked, where the victims are. So they run a trafficking business and they run a legitimate business because these people want to look respectable. They'll probably give money to charity. They'll be members of various social clubs, business associations, and be respectable. You wouldn't know, but they're trafficking human beings. So they pay for the goods and they get shipped back to country A where they're sold. And they sell them at a price cheaper than other dealers. So not only are they providing servicing an illegal market, they're undercutting legitimate business. Once the items that go back into country A are sold, they then repatriate the money back home to where they come from, and any anti-money laundering framework in existence, if it picks up the transfers, they can say, oh, no problem, it comes from the sale of all these goods that I imported. It all looks legitimate. And because they're so distanced from the victims, they'll never get caught. That's why you get so many women caught, because they're managing the victims. You raid the place. Hey, got the victims, got the girls who's running it, right? Lock them up. But the males and some females who run the organisation, they walk scot-free. All right, again, let's finish off. Origin of countries of victims of trafficking. You see, for Australia, it's very low, right? But once we leave Australia, that's when they come, the risk of being trafficked. Now, young people, unaware. But not just young people. The older people now are being caught up in trafficking for drugs. Some out of Hong Kong recently, my colleagues in the Australian Federal Police spent quite a while investigating a case to prove they were innocent. You know how hard it is to prove someone's innocent? Very, very hard, because there's nothing to find. So thankfully they accepted the story from these elderly people and drilled further into it. So young people are vulnerable there. So you can see some of the areas where people come from. Notice how Nigeria stands out. I do a lot of work here in Botswana, and let me tell you, I can bore you for another hour later, Botswana's beautiful. You want to go to African experience? Botswana, all right? That's all I'll say. All right, destination, United States, mainly because a lot of people from Mexico and other areas, here in Central America and from parts of South America, China, Thailand. Now, I don't know why Australia is so dark, because the figures don't support that. Australian Institute of Criminology done research to get a walk free. They don't support that rating. So I'm not sure how that got there for the UNODC. All right? But Thailand. Thailand's a major, major centre for human trafficking, both sexual services and labour. I try not to buy anything made in Thailand, but it's very hard. All right, so again, major transnational flows. This is the most recent one. So you can see how people are flooding out of South America to various places like the Middle East, East Asia and Africa and the Pacific. We get grouped in there, it's not quite right. East Asia and South Asia into the United States. You can see those flows yourself. Actually, most of them are migration flows. I said before, migration is a major component of human trafficking. So it's just like if we're all lions in Africa, we don't chase the animals around the Kalahari and whatever, because it's too tiring. We just wait for them at the waterhole. So we wait. If we either get the victims here in that source country or on the other end. We don't need to keep following them everywhere. And then we use them. All right. This is out for the Pacific area, and most of it comes out of China in particular, and it's going into Europe, Western and Eastern Europe, and into North America. And you were seeing the issue in the UK, it was over a year and a half ago, with those Vietnamese who were trafficked, died in the container, in the truck. Now I'm seeing here in Australia a trend. I'm seeing, because of my training in Hong Kong and my experiences in Singapore, I'm seeing a prostitution business developing in Australia over the last 10 years, which mimics exactly Singapore and Hong Kong. Have you noticed all the Chinese massage parlours that have been springing up all around Perth? We're a bit late. They sprung up in Sydney, Melbourne, all around the other parts of Australia. They all sell the same services at the same price. And the girls will offer a full service, even though there'll be a sign in there saying, we don't provide that service. And they rotate from various centres every day. Now, they could be legitimate employees, but we don't know if they've been here on legitimate visas, but working in violation of their visa, okay? And if they are, is someone getting a kickback from them? They have to give money back to stay in the country, and that's the case. That's trafficking. And what are we doing about it? Not a lot. All right, so I'll finish now with international standards. This is the international standard, UN Convention and Protocol. The convention is the against transnational organised crime, so it covers every major crime in the world. It supplements the Vienna Convention, which is drug trafficking. They issued three protocols. One of them is the protocol to prevent, suppress and punish trafficking persons, especially women and children. So this goes into great detail what countries should do. Sadly, about only 178 countries have adopted that protocol. So there's other countries, some countries that have not adopted it. And if they have adopted it, they haven't implemented it. Now, my view is countries should be audited on this. They do for money laundering, right? We have what's called the Financial Action Task Force standards, 40 standards, and countries get assessed on how they comply with those standards. This should be another one. Okay? I think the UN was the big driver of that one. I could be correct me if I'm wrong, but the UN is a big driver of that. Has to be. You want to get some of these things through. If the US does not behind it, you forget it, because it's influence. And to do everything we can to support it. All right, so it came to effect in 2003. 178 parties have signed it. The usual players that don't comply with international law have not signed it, like Iran, Somalia, I think Sudan has now. Interesting, Papua New Guinea hasn't signed it. And I thought Australia had done a lot of work to, you know, help Papua New Guinea to sign that. All right, so the UNODC acts as custodian of the protocol and assists countries to implement it. They've also gone further than that. They've started up this Blue Heart campaign. Has anyone ever heard of the Blue Heart campaign? All right, again, it's designed to raise awareness, and for those who want to donate money to it, they can. And they, because the UN, people think it's got a lot of money, and it hasn't. Work for the UN, and they pay the cheapest rates you can get as a consultant, I can tell you. It's almost you're doing it for love. And now I've seen the problems in Nigeria, I probably would do it for love. But in fact, I have, in some respects. All right, so it's raise awareness. And what they're trying to do is engage government, civil society, corporate sector, individuals to fight human trafficking. And it's part of the reason why I'm here, is to raise that awareness, to get talking amongst your friends and your colleagues about this issue, because it's going to impact our children now and in the future. All right, again, some international, there's plenty of international agencies involved in this area, all doing great work. This is a UK one called Stop the Traffic. It has managed to get a lot of reform done in Europe. And this is an America one, A21. They've also here in Australia, a US one. Australia has a plan, and it's a good plan. I think we're one of the few countries that's got a plan. This supplements an earlier plan, which has expired, and it's a national action plan to combat modern slavery. And the reason for that is because of the risk many of our companies have to using exploited labour. They use the umbrella term modern slavery, but it covers everything I talked about: trafficking in persons, slavery, servitude, forced labour, deceptive recruiting, debt bondage and forced marriage. As of 1 August, 25 individuals have been convicted in Australia, because we don't have that seriousness here because of our different low-level corruption, and poverty compared to the rest of the world is nowhere near it. Okay, there's a two major drivers. Interesting, from 2004, we have a program called Support for Trafficked People Program, and I was in the Federal Police and that was implemented, and it was a great program. It still occurs. So if we did come across a victim, the first thing you do is, as a police officer, is after securing the scene, arresting any offenders or gathering any evidence, is hand the victim over to non-police, to a female. Because many victims from where they come from believe that police are corrupt. We're going to sell them out. We're going to recycle them. They're scared of us. They won't talk to us. So the great initiative, and I don't know who came up with it, but we hand them over to a welfare agency. Originally it was a Christian agency, but then because some of the victims were not Christians, that had to change, because you're dealing with Muslims, Hindus, and so forth. Not that there's any problems with what the Christians are doing. No, they're motivated to, you know, to help these people, but perceptions are a big thing. So we'd hand them over to them, and when we wanted to interview the victim, we would be done with full support from those agencies, who would have told them, no, you can trust the police. The police are having nothing to do with you except interview you, and that's all. And we introduced other mechanisms, such as giving evidence by video camera, concealing the face of the victim, and so forth. And there was welfare support. There was money, cash given to help them live in the community. And we could keep them here under various visa schemes so they can give evidence, because most of the court cases took 2 or 3 years. Where when we first saw them in South Korean victims, we deported them. All right, so let me finish off. With the Modern Slavery Act, we do have, if you want to look at yourself, online register of modern slavery statements, companies that have $100 million or turnover or more, I have to lodge a statement to say what their slavery risks are and how they're mitigating them. It's not as comprehensive as the one in California, which I think is the gold standard, but it's close. My blue space, just two more slides. This is a good one. It's been set up for help people who are going to be sold into marriage. It educates girls and boys, but mainly girls, on what to do if they're caught in that situation. So they can contact us, go to this website, and their problems will be handled by professionals. And there's been a couple of referrals from that. Anti-Slavery Australia is another group that provides legal support and other special support. They work out of one of the universities in Sydney. They actually work in conjunction with this My Blue Sky. So if anyone contacts them, guaranteed they're going to get the support they need, all right? Particularly legal support. As well as wrapping up with that, welfare support from the government and everything like that. And I'll finish. That's it. That's Human Trafficking 101. Each one of those elements can be a full topic, but I've run well over time. Thank you.
Okay, so we have a little bit of time for questions. So we'll... Natalie, I think you had one.
Thank you so much, firstly, Chris.
We're not having dinner if it's a hard one.
The question I had was related to the first map that you put up on the screen. And the title is Shares of Detected Trafficking Victims by Form of Exploitation by Subregion of Detection 2018. Yes, that one.
That one?
Yes.
Yes.
And I was really interested in the numbers between South America, Central America, and North America, with South America having the lowest percentage that were sexually exploited victims. I know that Central America tends to have higher crime rates than South America, but I was wondering if you could shed a little bit of light as to why North America has more sexually exploited victims than South America, and why Central America has significantly more as well.
I don't know, but my gut will tell me because this is based on detected traffic victims, the professionalism and capability in North America, Canada and the United States would be better than what they are in Central and South America. So you've actually got a lot of agencies up there that, I actually was in contact with one recently, that supports victims, identifies victims, but it would have a lot to do with capacity of the law enforcement organisations there and intelligence. And lower corruption. Right, we're here. If it's a corrupt environment, you're not likely to get the detections and the figures. Not two questions.
So Flavia, yeah.
Flavia.
Thank you, Chris, for such an enlightening presentation, a very important topic. So I just would like to know, like, when we are tracking human trafficking operations on the ground, like, what are the best strategies to track down their operations? And in practical terms, like, what can be done to really crack down on the way they operate? If you can just give us a little bit more detail. Thank
you. Here or overseas?
In Australia and overseas.
Well, here, we've got a very good framework, but it can do better. And much has got to do with resources. If you're not aware, we have immigration officers from Australian Border Force at certain airports overseas. If you ever board the flight in, say, Kuala Lumpur or Singapore, you would see someone talking to people in the line. Have you seen that, those of you who travelled? They're looking for victims. The airlines themselves have been trained, and they probably need refresher training. Staff have been trained to look for victims on the flight and handlers to see who's watching them on the flight. What we could do here is, first of all, that Modern Slavery Act. Let's go back to that. The organisations that only required a report have a turnover of 100 million or more. Well, and that's groups as well, so that closes that loophole. My view, what should happen is the reporting should occur for every Australian company and entity that does business overseas, including me. So I go overseas and do business, I should be required to report on my human trafficking risks and what I've done to mitigate it. Because the law, our law, if you're not aware of it, Much of our law follows Australian individuals, citizens and residents and companies overseas. We've mirrored almost like what US law. That'd be for human trafficking, terrorism financing, money laundering, everything. So no matter where you are as Australian citizen, Australian company, you're bound. So I thought reporting on that, because that just raises awareness. And I think to combat it here would be to businesses, regardless of their turnover, if they deal with migrants, right? Particularly backpackers who get exploited, and refugees who get jobs here, they should be required also to report on their human trafficking risks and what they've done. Now, and put in place penalties. At the moment, there are no penalties for that. If the minister, you accept the report, you can go up and say, write a letter, say, oh, you haven't complied, you haven't put a report in, can you put another one in, or put one in, or can you amend it? That's not good enough. Okay, the feather does not work. As President Roosevelt said, speak softly, but carry a big bat. Right? All right. So that would be the things I'll be looking for. Other things would be for, I think, policing to be increased, both state and federal, to be more proactive intelligence gathering. Well, in my own time, I noticed things particularly the Chinese. Not picking on Chinese, but that was my expertise in terms I went to Hong Kong to do two courses in triads. There was a two-week course there then, and Chinese laundering methods. And the Hong Kong police would teach you how Chinese organised crime operates and all the tentacles and signs. And I see the same thing here in Australia. Same thing. We need to ramp that up and increase the intelligence initiatives and target them also to migrant communities because they're vulnerable. We do it for terrorism, we should be doing it for human trafficking. We're not. Now, overseas, I can't comment on every country, but I think Australia should play a greater role, a much greater role. You know, our soft power has been cut, let's be honest. Not just in our aid, but in our capacity to teach other countries. When the Bali attack occurs, the Australian government built a college in Samarang in Indonesia. It's called Jakarta Centre for Law Enforcement Cooperation. It's run with the Indonesian police. I've taught there many times. We teach Indonesian authorities well there on various crimes. Why haven't we done that in other parts of the Pacific? We have transnational organised crime centres in the Pacific. We should have built a college and taught to police there to a certain standard. I do a lot of pro bono work for the Commonwealth Africa Anti-Corruption Centre. I never even heard of it until I was in Botswana doing commercial work and someone came up to me and said, would you help us out? So I did a bit of pro bono work for this Commonwealth Africa Anti-Corruption Centre. Now I do it online for free. I'm doing all these African Commonwealth countries in Africa, teaching them anti-bribery and corruption. And the amount of money they get from Australia is minuscule. But you have to just pump up, even a million or two would be fantastic to talk about combating corruption, which is a major driver of human trafficking. Right? We're not punching above our weight. We're not even punching anywhere near our weight on this. We're letting other countries do the heavy lifting. And it's going to bite us. You know, the issues we've done, I won't say too much about people smuggling and that, but we put a lot of effort into that, and I was part of that program, but we've dropped the ball on other forms of human abuse. Well, I shouldn't get me into trouble, I think. Be careful what I say. Any more questions? Yes, sir.
So we might just have time for one more. One more? So, Brendan?
Hi, Chris. Thank you for that expose. I think you've touched on it in the answers to your question, but not so much in your presentation about it could be classified as human trafficking, but it could be also classified as wage theft. It could be classified as other forms of worker abuse. We've seen a lot of it in Australia in various sectors. And sadly, it involves quite often students from such institutions and where we are today. And unfortunately, I have come across it a lot with international students who end up paying employers to work for them to get their visa periods. And I ask them, why don't you report? Oh, well, if I report, I won't get my visa. They're really shocking stories that are happening just around us, even in these suburbs around us, about students who end up paying employers $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year for the right to work for them, and so that they can sign off on their visa application 2 years down the track. Not, and then leaving aside the agricultural sector, which is endemic for using legally arrived tourist visa holders to work, and we literally eat the benefits of that by the cheap supply chains and the like. And unfortunately, I see a lack of will in pursuing these sorts of, I guess, these sorts of modern slavery events. Can you comment on that?
Based on those facts, I'd say that's not human trafficking. But it's obviously exploitation, but not human trafficked exploitation. Because the person, the alleged victim, is not immobilised from doing anything. They've simply been scammed of their money. Had they, like the employer was to take their passport from them or restrict them in some way, constrain them in some way, then that would amount to human trafficking. So you get, for example, overseas, what people apply to a recruitment agency to get a job. The recruitment, and they'll get the job. The recruitment agency will then bill the company that employs the person. Right? So the company will pay the recruitment agent a fee, but then when the worker arrives there and does the work, the company withholds wages until the recruiting fee is paid, and some, like interest. But on the basis of the circumstance you've outlined, it wouldn't be human trafficking, from what I could see. Serious as it is, and scandalous as it is, because my gut will tell me that if someone's doing that, if they're not doing human trafficking, doing something else in terms of perhaps straight-out taxation avoidance. That'll be the first thing come to mind. And perhaps even before I started corporation offences, it could be behind it. That'd be my starting point. If I wanted to kick in the door, all right, to get a search warrant, that's where I'd start. Always start with that, because there's always a winner. Always a winner. But I'd encourage people to report it. Has it made the news at all?
Sorry, we just had...
All right, because I know some journalists are interested. Got my card? Seriously? Yep, expose it. Look, the power of the... Another thing that keeps us safe is the media. That's the reality. Expose, expose, expose. I forget the name of the guy. He was a US federal judge. He didn't make this comment when he was a judge, but sunlight is the best disinfectant. Expose it. So let's get it out there.
We just had one last one.
Let me know, because I'm meeting one on Saturday, a journalist.
Yeah, this is very interesting. We've personally been involved in fairly large-scale trafficking between Indonesia and Australia. And a lot of this was around the people smuggling concerns about 2010, 2012. The reality of a lot of that situation was that the Australian government imprisoned about 246 children. The youngest of these children were 12. Some of these children spent 3.5 years in adult maximum security prisons, about 77 of them, for periods of up to 4 years. Now, the Australian government was fully aware that these were children, they were trafficked. But the political imperative to stop people smuggling decided it would overrule everything else. UN conventions in regards to protection of children are ratified by the Australian government, but never incorporated into Australian law. As the Chief Justice of West Australia said, they are simply there to clear areas of ambiguity. They have no effect on our law. Currently, there is very significant litigation going on in the Court of Appeal in West Australia, the Federal Court and the High Court. But it did appall me that, you know, if I look at some of the stuff that was done in the case of the Australian Federal Police, they entered the computer databases and changed all the children's ages so they were all 19 years and one day old. And that was processed through the courts.
Seriously? Because that's a serious criminal offence. I couldn't imagine
that. That is a matter for the High Court is now deciding. So between the High Court, my understanding now, I'm not a lawyer, but the High Court now, you have to go to the Federal Court, who then does all the stuff and then passes a decision to the High Court. There's a separate compensation case in the Federal Court, and there's a whole bunch of cases in the Court of Appeal to have sentences and convictions overturned.
I appreciate if you send me the details, if you could. If you've got any court references, send it to me, please. I'll have a look at it. I do know the AFP has had a centralised computer system for 25 years at least. And once you enter personal details, then they can't be changed. They can only be changed by an IT person in Canberra. You can't change the details of an individual at all. It's an anti-corruption measure. You can't delete a record. You can't change a record. So once if I arrest you and I put the details in, it's locked in. I can put a supplemental record in and link it there and say, look, this is incorrect, but the primary record is in there forever and a day. Okay? Unless, of course, you've been falsely arrested as a mistaken identity, there are ways to change it, but that is a long process. So I'd be very surprised. Please, I'm not suggesting what you're saying is incorrect, but please send it to me because I'm very interested in that. Only because I'm one phone call away from the current commissioner. He used to work for me, Rhys Kershaw. And I know where he will stand on that. He was actually the officer, senior AFP officer, then on the Tampa, and boarded the Tampa. So just to make certain that people who were on there weren't going to be perhaps manhandled the wrong way by soldiers, perhaps. But thank you.
Thank you, Chris. So I'll invite our Treasurer, Claire Randolph, to deliver the vote of thanks.
Thanks, Grania. So I've actually been sitting here trying to figure out how to do a vote of thanks for this, because the reality is I don't feel particularly thankful in this moment. I just feel hugely depressed. But maybe that's the point, because we all know that human trafficking is an issue, but it's human nature to look away from things that make us uncomfortable. And that's not the way to go about it. It's like you said, like it or not, this is the world we live in. This is the stark reality. And I think myself personally, and I imagine everyone in this room, is going to carry what we've heard here tonight for a while. And we will have those conversations with family and with colleagues, because it is important to talk about these things and sort of confront that head on. So on behalf of AWA and all our guests tonight, I want to say thank you for the work that you do. Thank you for taking the time to really shine such a horrifically stark spotlight on this important issue. And I hope you please accept this small token of our appreciation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for having me.